Hey folks, thanks for tuning in. My guest this week is Owen Korzick. Along with being an amazing singer-songwriter, he's also the drummer for the band Nervous, and he runs Double Rainbow Studios out of Braintree. Our topic for this episode was self-actualization, but we got to it in kind of a roundabout way. We were talking about DIY recording and how being in control of your own sort of story arc as an artist has a lot to do with whether or not the work you're doing makes you feel like a whole person, like a complete person. And I would say the conclusion that we eventually arrived at is that it's very difficult to feel actualized without the help of others, without being accountable to the community that supports you, especially if you really identify with a community and then you're actually being accountable to yourself. And Owen also just has a lot of tips and strategies for how to manage your time and how to manage your productivity as a DIY artist. So I know I got a lot of advice just from doing the interview. And anyone listening, I hope you might hear something that helps you as well. The song you're hearing now is called Uncomfortable. It's one of the songs Owen wrote for the album Cosmic by Nervous, which was released in 2019. And obviously there are no dates to promote right now. People still aren't really playing shows, but I hope everybody is staying safe and looking out for each other and practicing whatever self-care you need to in order to keep healthy during the pandemic. But I do want to plug Owen's podcast. It's called Virtual Music Mentors. In this episode, he was talking about how he wanted to start his own show as a way to foster long-form conversation about music and songwriting and the process that goes into it. So it's kind of very similar to what we were talking about in this episode, but with a myriad of guests, and he's doing a great job with it so far. So go check out Virtual Music Mentors on Spotify. I was honored to be one of his first guests, and my episode just aired recently. And the only other things to plug, I suppose, would be Owen's album Glow, which we do talk about a little bit in the beginning of this episode. It was released in 2016, and it's a beautiful collection of songs. And again, the album Cosmic by his band Nervous. There have been whisperings of another Nervous album that is currently being written and or recorded, and at some point we can look forward to that. So check that out when it comes out. But for now, here's Owen Korzick. Enjoy the show. Our mutual friend Joe Folan told me something about you.
Yeah.
He said that you've been sitting on this solo album for like 11 years.
Which one? This current one?
Oh, I don't know. and 11 years is a hyperbole, but like...
Yeah. So, yeah, I tend to be slow with my solo work because I feel like I have control over it. So yeah, I'm not like worried if I slow down because I know that I will persist on it. And like, I just have so many other projects like going on that are either more financially sustaining or more active with friends of mine and things like that. But I actually, for this solo album, I keep chipping at it, but the songs, I think this is probably what he means, is that the songs have been developing for years before that. Like, there's been stuff I wrote back when I was in Berkeley in like 2015 that's still going on.
Yeah.
My upcoming album. So.
Well, I think what Joe was saying was that, like, he had a copy of, you know, maybe rough mixes of those songs.
Hmm.
Like, there's a certain set of songs that you're kind of still honing and fine-tuning. And
he might have been talking about Glow, which I did put out, but I didn't really... It wasn't, like, a big pushed release, because I was just like, I got to a certain point... This was one of the big things I learned about that record, is that there was a period of time where I had most of the record done, but I made this critical mistake of trying to make like the track list like conceptually perfect, or in a way. So like I titled the album off of what was supposed to be a title track, but that title track ended up being too unrealistic to like finish the exact way that I imagined. So I just ended up having to put it out without that and just kind of focusing on the songs that I was able to realistically execute. But it taught me a big lesson. I had this idea that to make a really good album was to make it exactly how you envision it from the beginning and compromise that at all in any way.
Yeah.
And I ended up learning over the years that you have to be real with like what your skills can actually execute in a reasonable time frame to get that album released.
Sure.
So what happened with that song Glow is I was like cheating my way into those notes by just editing things. But then I got to this one song where I was like, wait, I can't edit this one anymore. This has got to actually be like, I have to be able to actually perform this reasonably. Otherwise, like there's just no way I could just like punch in a take here and there when I get the note and then like, you know, like Frankenstein it together, which is kind of what I did in some of the other songs.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to set a goal like sort of at the top of like what is possible and really have that like high standard. But I didn't have the perspective at the time of like when it comes to releasing music, you got to work with what is available to you at the time. Because otherwise, if you're trying to wait until you're at that peak potential before you release anything, you'll just like the entire like first 5 years of your music career will just go unseen, you know?
Sure.
So I had I just had a moment where I was like, I just flipped my perspective on it and I was like, I'm just going to put this out quick and then move on, you know?
Yeah. Well, I find it interesting is that, you know, responding to your thing about knowing how a song is supposed to sound in your head and the means that you employ to try to get there.
Yeah.
Right. So when I first started recording, I had no formal knowledge of recording software whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So it was how this sounds in my head and then what I think the foundation of that would be in order to start a recording, which is wrong because I had no idea how to record.
Yeah.
So by nature of being uneducated, I just kind of made songs by experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after a while you give up on trying to make it perfect or trying to make it sound how it sounds in your head and you start building on the experimentation that you've been playing around with. And this is especially for like at home DIY recording where you don't have professional equipment and you don't have like guest musicians like you might at Berkeley to come and like sit in with you. And so you start doing oohs and ahs instead of a string section, you know, things like that. But fast forward, and where I'm at now is like I have a little bit more of a knowledge of how to record things and how to produce. I still don't have all the tools that I'd like to have. I still don't have all like 100% of the resources that I would want. And so I'm doing a lot of that like cut and paste Frankenstein stuff where I'm like, all right, this can sound how I want it to sound, but it has to be a little bit doctored. And I don't love that. So I've been thinking for a while about how to get out of that headspace of it needs to be perfect and it needs to be doctored and like I'm willing to spend the time editing, so I will spend the time editing.
Exactly.
And
I've been there.
Yeah. And my girlfriend pointed out to me the other day, a song is never going to be perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect song. And so all you should really be worried about is how to get it listenable. Like if all the parts are right enough and if the mix is right enough and the harmonies are right enough, then like send it off to be mastered and let somebody else worry about those finishing touches.
Yeah.
But I'm like, how do you know when something is close enough to perfect? Like, sure, it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
But how do you know when something is close enough?
So I've built up a few strategies to like sort of like get past that feeling of like when is enough enough? Like one thing I'm doing with this album I'm sitting on now are like there's probably 2/3 of the songs are like okay, you know, like I can send it to friends and they can listen to it and they can understand what the song is and kind of like the approximate vision for it.
Right.
And that's the key opportunity, because what I didn't do in previous albums is I didn't get a lot of outside feedback.
Right.
So I'm working on that now of like just getting more voices of input to either validate that what I'm doing is fine or suggest things I didn't notice that I should change. Because I think as artists, we're so closely connected to what we're making and we go through these periods of being like way too subjective and like trying to get something to a level that's either unnecessary or like maybe too wrapped up in technical detail rather than the big picture. So I try to focus more on why I'm doing this, and is it going to deliver the feeling that I want to convey, rather than like trying to do everything like technically correct under the hood that people won't even see. Like one principle that I've been really getting into lately that's really cool is like the 80-20 rule, or like the Pareto principle, which it's the idea that like 80% of your results come from 20% of like what you're doing. So
interesting. Okay.
So it's
so this, you put in more technical effort than is necessary, and what's actually going to be noticed is 20% of that technical effort.
Yeah. In like, they found that this is like a principle that's just kind of inherent in nature or something. It's like, it's okay. A cool thing to like research on your own, but I use that to like recenter myself and not get too obsessive, because it just reminds me that like there's a small, narrow element of what I'm doing that's like really, really important to get across to people. And it's okay to be really picky about that. But then if you really think about it, about would I rather make an album more quickly that gives my audience what they're looking for and still conveys my idea, or would I rather spend like an extra year on this, making it exactly how I want to hear in my head, but the audience wouldn't have even like cared in the first place, because that's so subjective, you know?
Right, right. Well, you kind of already answered this question, but the next question that I wanted to ask you was, once you start Frankensteining the hell out of a song, does that take the art out of it? Because like, if your performance is patched together, if you know your lyrics are kind of like finished on the fly, and there's not like a full emotive performance, does that take away from the art of it? My argument is no, because I was having this conversation with our friends Ian Garland and Brian Hundress a couple months ago. It was when Matt Minigel had just finished the first mix of my single that I'm going to be releasing soon. And I was playing them like the rough mix of it, and they're like, well, that's good enough. Just put it out. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's not good enough, though. And here's why. Because like, I can play it that way, but it's not mixed to the point where it's like an ideal listening experience. And this is what I think Kate was talking about when she said that it's never going to be perfect, is because like, I have an idea of perfect, and no one else knows what my idea of perfect is. Yeah. So anybody else listening to the track, like, it's mixed how it's mixed.
Exactly.
When I'm listening to the track, it's not necessarily mixed how I want it to be mixed.
Yeah.
So my argument is no, because like, there is an art to assembling a song, mixing a song, creating a certain type of soundscape that you want to be heard that represents what's in your head. And that makes it your own unique piece of art.
Yeah.
Whereas if you want to go for the emotive performance and you want to go for the raw, you know, natural tone, then you can do that live. You can always do that
exactly
live.
Yeah.
But there are certain soundscapes that I think really, really count as art, you know, insofar as any kind of painting that would be pieced together in that way would count as art. And so you kind of already had answered that already. Yeah. But
well, I have more to add on that for sure.
Sure.
I think a lot of this also depends on like what lights you up as an artist. Like, I think in this discussion, I think you and I both have this sense of like we like the sonic landscape. We like the mixing. We like it to sound, like you said, like an ideal listening
experience.
We listen
to music on good headphones.
Yeah.
And therefore have a sense of what we want it to sound like.
And I think that's like, it's not something every artist or songwriter or whatever has to do, but if it's a thing that you're strong at and you feel is a vehicle for conveying that emotional experience, or even if it's not like, even if it's a form of art that's like less emotional, at least like some sort of tool to convey your intention. And then I think it's worth, you know, exploring that like pretty fully. I think the big discussion about this is like, do I spend a longer time making a higher quality of art, or do I sort of like cap that quality at like what would be sort of quote unquote noticeable, and then like be able to make more art, which I think leads to more personal growth as an artist. yeah, over the long
and we
term,
know a
sense.
Lot of people, that's their MO, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people in our scene, that's what they prefer to do. It's like, let's record this kind of rough, but very accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And it then exists in the scene to be consumed and mm-hmm. to be appreciated. And then you can move on to the next thing. I'm not that prolific of a writer, personally. So I would rather take a group of songs that I think is like good and finished, and it'll take me long enough to get to the next group of songs or get to the finishing point of the next group of songs that I might as well take my time now on a recording and like on the process of cataloging what mm-hmm. I have.
Yeah. I almost go into two different phases of working on a certain thing. There's a way of working where I am focused on speed and like finishing something, and it's like, usually when I'm working with a skill that I'm already good at. So if I understand like, hey, I'm already good at mixing this certain style of music, I will tend to decide to like, say, set a timer when I'm working that way so I don't make it take forever, because like I have to trust that the skill set is already there and not like keep making it take a super long time when it's already going to be good.
Yeah.
But I think in other skill sets where, like, one thing I've been toying with here and there throughout last year, especially too, is like producing like electro pop and like working with synths and stuff. And that's more of a new skill set for me. So it's funny, ironically, the way I've done it has been kind of speedy, but I think in order for me to really master that craft, it's going to take a lot of days of like carving out the time to just be like, I'm going to spend a full day on like just getting really good at this without worrying how long it takes.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like a different way of like, are you creating your art to become a better artist in the meantime? Or are you creating it to just share an ability that you already have, which I think is a lot faster. The latter is a lot faster, but I think the former is more, it can be more fulfilling in like expanding for our growth. But yeah, it's like a balance thing, because like you don't, like if you only ever do art that grows yourself personally, it kind of gets to the point where you're not showing much of it, because you're already yeah. doing, you're always in that behind the scenes mode, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're supposed to be talking about self-actualization and kind of like how to get yeah. there. And this is totally pertinent to that
yeah.
because, and I'll give, you know, my own side of this argument. Yes, I like to take my time on things. Yes, I like to be, you know, technically thorough mm-hmm. when putting a song together. But also, so much of self-actualization for me is establishing and expanding the catalog of art. You know, mm-hmm. am I an actualized person? Am I who I want to have grown into? If I don't have that catalog to kind of back me up and to represent what my thoughts are
yeah.
And what my skills and talents are. So does that hinder the growth? Does that slow me down from feeling like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing? You know, if it takes that long to get to the finished product. And I don't think that there's actually an objective answer to that, but sometimes it feels like, yeah, I should hurry the fuck up so that I can like become this person that I want to be.
Yeah. I think there's also like sort of compromises to that too, or like sort of a way of doing both. Say you're doing a long-term art project, but you want to still be, you know, active in the world and like on social media or whatever, then like kind of your only option at that point is to share little bits and pieces of like the works in progress within it,
right?
Which I think touches at the other point. And I think that might be a really good thing for us all to think about, is like, in a way, we're all going after some sort of long story arc of who we're turning into as an artist. And
sure.
I don't think anyone is trying to just put out a few albums in a year and then stop and never do art again. It's
right.
It will always be a long journey. So I think the way of balancing that with like making sure there's like a portfolio happening is like doing smaller projects in between, or like sharing small bits of like what's going on. And that's also a reason I like doing producing as a audio engineer and stuff, is because I get to, you know, put in a little bit of flair in other people's projects, or say I'm like playing on as like a session drummer on something. It's like I still have things that are me, but I'm not like, it's kind of all adding up into like my desire to become a really good producer over time, my desire to write better songs and like better formulate my overall vision. But
right,
I think
right.
helping people along the way, and like I find a lot of times when I'm collaborating with others, it helps keep that momentum, because I think it's maybe it's like a power of teamwork or something, or accountability, but it's just, I notice things are more likely to be put out into the world if there's more than one person involved.
Something that Ali Zagami and I have talked about a lot is, and social media makes this a much, much worse, I think. It's this habit that some artists have of talking about projects that never come to fruition, but having the idea and talking about the idea is very easily confused with working on the idea and being proactive on it, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's easy to just have something in your mind and projecting that thing to the world and thinking that that means it's materializing mm-hmm. because it's being discussed.
Yeah.
But the thing never actually materializes. And I've, you know, Ali and I have both been guilty of this. That's why we talk about it a lot. But, you know, I used to do this all the time. And I found that that kind of dissipates the more that you participate in other people's art. Mm-hmm. The more, like, communal art becomes, and the more that you're invited into other people's processes, the less you have to kind of cop out on your own, you know? The less you have to create this imaginary thing, even though it's not doesn't feel yeah. imaginary yeah. at the time, but it becomes yeah. imaginary the more you put it off. So yeah
I've been thinking about this lately, that there could also be a counter argument that when you're contributing a lot to other people's art, it's kind of like validating your own procrastination on your own stuff. I think about that a lot, and I'm like,
sure,
I know this is a good thing to do for many reasons, like, but like it does kind of make me wonder sometimes, like, is it, you know, slowing down my own art or speeding it up? And I think lately, though, I feel like it's speeding it up, especially because I feel I have a comparative experience of a time in my career where I was involved in a band that I felt was taking me away from my original music. And so I feel the difference, because I feel if I'm collaborating on the right things, it's always going to give me an insight of like I'll go back to my original music and it will feel easier, you know?
You're right.
Or
yeah.
I'll still have time in my schedule to work on it. I think where it gets dangerous is if like your contributions to other people are sucking your own energy away from like doing your own thing. And
yes.
I think that's something
yeah.
to be aware of, whether that's happening
yes.
and whether that's like the right thing to do for that period of time, you know?
Yeah. I've had to weigh that a lot this year. Had to start saying no to people, you know, mm-hmm. had to start like saying, okay, there needs to be a balance here. I want to participate in other people's art. I want to help them bring their vision to fruition. And I believe that I can. But there also has to be a balance in place where I can work on my own stuff. The podcast has even been that, you know, mm-hmm. it has been like a way to serve our scene in a really, really good way.
Yeah.
That is super enjoyable. Have had some great conversations. And then there are times when I'm just like, I need a few months off from this, you know, I can't even breathe right now. Like I need to get back to my
yeah.
own things. So it's like, I want to help other people. I often have like the resources and the energy to help other people. I want to benefit the scene however I can, but I also need to know how much I need to do for me and what it's going to take for me to be fulfilled. And more importantly, what it's going to take for me to kind of visualize what that looks like long term. Like, how do I mm-hmm. balance that out long term?
Exactly.
How do
yeah.
I schedule out and budget my time so that I can make sure that I do eventually end up with the catalog that I want and I mm-hmm. have time to actually make that manifest?
Yeah. And I think patience is like a good quality for that. I like for where I'm at currently, and I could change my mind about this in a month, but the way I currently feel is I would rather just be, you know, active in general in any sort of capacity and patient about like, you know, like my own personal putting out a solo album or whatever. I'd rather just be like, you know, involved in the scene and helping people in some sense than like the flip side of like going into a whole, like a, into a, not a whole, what am I trying to say? Like an isolated space and like closing off my network and just only working on that solo album and then coming back out. Sure, it would get done, but I don't think it would feel as good. It wouldn't feel as communal than taking my time on it and like helping people along the way.
Yeah.
And I also wanted to go back to one of your point, the idea of like discussing your ideas before they're happening.
Oh,
and
sure.
I think the way I get around that personally is if I can show that they're in progress or being done,
right,
that is a lot more like, okay, I'm actually talking about what I'm actually working on rather than talking about the idea itself, you know?
And that is the double-edged sword of social media, because it can allow you to share what the progress is, or it can allow you to share in just like a hypey way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it can give you like the license to present this false personality and a false sense of progress and a false sense of like celebrity, I guess.
I feel like that's not as like fun or enjoyable though. Like,
right.
Because I've had those phases, like especially with that first album. I used to like, you know, I would write a hypey post of like, oh, I want to get it done this summer. And like, I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know anything about an album timeline, but I was just hyping it up to make myself feel good. But like, I don't remember ever feeling good after, because I'm just writing a post. I'm not actually, feels so much better to make something, or even to like, you know, it's great to like make it and tell people about it, but even just doing some things behind the scenes for yourself that you just don't feel like telling people is like totally fine, you know?
I get both sides of it too, because on one hand, it's great to have accountability, like especially within a community, especially within a music scene. It's great to be accountable to people. And if you've said, I'm working on this project, I'm writing this album, I'm recording this thing, then like you're kind of on the hook for it, you know, especially if you're close with those people and like they want to see you succeed and you want that happy moment and you know that they're going to be supportive of you. Of course you want that, so you're going to be accountable to those people. And then there's the recluse in a lot of artists that's like, well, or I can just like, it kind of works as an excuse too, to stay inside. Like, I'm working on this album. Yeah. It'll be out soon. It'll be worth it. I'm not going to see anybody for a while. I don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, you have an excuse to stay inside.
I mean, that can be good too. I think the times I've felt like being a recluse like that has been very good is if I know that I'm really working hard, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
if I, for instance, for me, like one of those sort of recluse phases when I was mixing Cosmic and I just really wanted that to sound good. And so I sort of like, I wasn't going out as much. It was kind of like just day after day, I was just getting, I wanted to become better at mixing and like just really work through this album that I had a lot of faith in and like do that well. And it was, it came out well because, and also there was a deadline at the end, which was, that's another like accountability hack. And then just knowing if you are going to be a recluse stuff about just like still being, having the self-discipline to drive it and not just kind of like, if you're doing the recluse thing and it's like pure inspiration based and like, you know, say like listening to music or listening to interviews and stuff. And like, you're not really like getting into the studio and showing up. I think that's like a cycle where it's like, you'd be better off just working with other people who are going to cultivate that discipline through community.
Yeah. Another part of that is the plight of the DIY producer and songwriter though, which is that, especially, you know, if you're editing and producing your own stuff, you have to find time to do that at home on your own. Either that is like your introvert time, or that is like your at home work time, or however you want to catalog that. And you also have to have a social life, and you also have to have a musical social life where you're out there kind of promoting, you know, I don't want to use the dirty word networking, but like,
I actually, you know. I see those words as the opposite. I like the word networking. I don't like the word promoting.
Oh, interesting. All right.
I guess it depends on the person.
Well, either way, like, you don't want to have to schmooze too much.
Yeah.
But no, like, just spending time within your music community, though, is really what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do that. Make sure that you have a healthy social life. Make sure that, like, you're taking care of yourself, that you're getting all your needs met, that you're, you know, supporting yourself financially. And in addition to all of that, You have to get the alone time at home.
Yeah.
And not just like the relaxing alone time, but the enough alone time where you can kind of put on the headphones and get to work.
Exactly.
And it's so difficult to balance all of that time. And I like doing the work, though. Like, that is a big benefit.
It's so enjoyable. Yeah. But it's like trade-offs, you know? It's like for my phase right now, like working on the stuff with my recording studio and trying to like drum up more business for that, I'm kind of making a mini trade-off of like, if I'm focusing on that and that's what I'm doing for work, I can't be doing 4 days a week working on my album at the same time. You know, it's like something's going to have to come first before the other, you know. And also just going back to like the DIY thing, part of why I think I ended up so DIY in the first place is because artists I was inspired by would like talk about in interviews, or I'd look through their Wikipedia credits and they would just be involved in a lot in the project. And I really like that because you get to see a lot of what that person's vision is creatively. And I think that's like the main benefit. And also a benefit I've noticed more recently is the more musical skills you do and just kind of getting used to doing a lot of different things, it starts to feel like they're all the same thing, all the same creative flow. And that's been so helpful for me like this past year or so, especially with Nervous, where we're like switching instruments and stuff. It's like no matter what instrument I'm on, I'm still performing as me with my taste. And it's like the same sort of feeling. But I think the problem with DIY is that like you have to find that limit of like, where does it stop? Where do I humble myself and say like someone would do this better than me, and I'm willing to say reach out to them and be more social than I normally would, or hire them and invest money, you know. And then you get into this thing where like you're the introvert guy and other people will ask you to join their projects, but you're not really reciprocating it to yourself. So you like I would end up in this thing where like I'm doing my solo stuff in a bubble, and then like other people, I'm like a collaborator with them. So it wasn't like I'm trying to work on over time, like probably through this year and the next year, being more of like, even though I'm doing my solo thing, to also welcome collaboration from the outside into it. So I'm not only just a collaborator to other people, but I'm welcoming collaborators for my own work,
which I think
is a very, at least for my personality, that's probably the most vulnerable way to do it. You know?
Yeah. That's one of the reasons that I asked Matt to mix my record for me.
Yeah.
Also, I think that he's one of the few people who would naturally understand what my vision is.
Yeah.
And like we're close enough that there aren't going to be any hard feelings if someone disagrees with something, you know. So it works out that way. It makes it more of a communal effort rather than me doing everything myself, which like I could do, but it would take me even longer.
Yeah.
And it creates and furthers the camaraderie that you might have with the people who are working on it with you. Yeah, it's really nice to know that the community is there and that you can reach out to people and say, like, I'm putting an album together. Will you help me work on it?
Yeah.
And they want to see your vision executed well, so they'll say yes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or they believe in what your finished product will be because they believe in you.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling to know that we have this community around here starting to form, and that sort of, like, just willingness to work with each other on things, just because we care about each other's growth, is like something that it's hard to come by. I didn't even find it really with, even when I was at like Berkeley, and I think that's a very common thing that people know about Berkeley, that like the networking there isn't really like, people are kind of still out for their self-interest mostly.
Totally. Yeah.
It's like, it's not, part of it is because like, this like whole like sort of chess company, quote unquote, community started in Rockland, which is like a small town. It's like there's just not enough people to make it about competition, you know?
Yeah, that's a good
point.
And
as it grows, it keeps that sort of ethic. And I think that's why it's been so strong.
But not even competition. I've seen no cynicism, which is really rare, I think. It doesn't feel cynical and it doesn't feel insular, even though it's a small town.
Yeah.
And even though it's, maybe it's a generational thing too.
That could be true, yeah.
What I see of people in my generation, especially around Worcester, and especially people who are kind of like older and like have, you know, maybe feel like they've missed their shot and are a little bit embittered, tend to be cynical and tend to think like, you know, things used to be better, whatever, that kind of mindset. Not calling anybody out and not saying that it's like rampant behavior or rampant thought patterns necessarily, but you hear a bit of that, I think, everywhere you go, except that I haven't heard any of that, any cynicism, any, you know, pessimism in the South Shore community. Mm-hmm. And that has been really surprising to me.
You know, it happens, but it's like sort of that like small minority where it's like, like we understand that there might be someone who tries to like enter into that community who doesn't share the same values. And then it's sort of like a discussion of like, okay, how do we deal with this? And either like either educate them on like what we believe in or just kind of set boundaries. But I think it's just keeping up that focus on keeping it genuine, I guess, I think has been really helpful in like, It's given me a lot of faith that like, it's like easy to be supported, you know, and that's not like, it's weird to like finally get to that point in your life where you have people who are there for you more than you expected they would be, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been talking with my girlfriend a lot about this too, because we've been talking about vulnerability a bit and being kind of a tertiary part of the South Shore scene, in as much as I'm around like once a month and just having conversations with everybody who's a part of that scene, I've learned a lot about vulnerability and kind of having the mission statement of always be vulnerable, always kind of, to use a dirty word to you, promote vulnerability. Yeah. You know, like,
It's not that much of a dirty word to me. No, I just mean in the sense of like, when people think promotion is the only thing.
Right.
You know,
right,
yeah. But yeah, anyway, go on. Sorry.
But yeah, being a part of a scene where vulnerability is really like a fixture of the scene, you know, and you want to make sure that everybody is comfortable being vulnerable and feel supported when they need support. Mm-hmm. And that is like such a good thing to go into a new relationship with. Yeah. It's such a good thing to go into a new friendship with.
I think about it also for me, I think when I first met like Justin was when there used to be like the barn shows at Brian Huntress's place.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I started doing my barn shows again. And so they came up there and there was just like already sort of that feeling and that vibe going on. And I thought of it more as like an authenticity thing, even more than vulnerability at the time. I think the vulnerability part is, it's newer and it's definitely very, very much emerging. But even in that time, it was like, it was just the idea that you could be yourself and like that you would be around other people being themselves and it would just feel normal. You
know? Yeah.
There's a lot of, I run into a lot of situations in the industry where, especially if you're doing some sort of music work, like a job or a certain type of freelance gig or something, there can be situations where you feel like you have to play a role to fit into this particular band or like what their purpose is. And I'm not knocking that because a lot of that is how, you know, if you're a working musician and your band is like out for a certain cause, like it's sort of like you have to conform to that in a sense. If you're, you know, just hired for that as a musician, and that's just kind of the kind of structure you're in. And I think it's just so different in the chess company community because it's all about originality and supporting original music. And I think that really reminded me that that's my favorite thing about music is new music. And there's so much music being made and so accessible to people that is almost like so diverse to the point where we have to be so unique and authentically ourselves to like really stand out, I think. And now that music is everywhere, it's sort of like what's next. Like the expansion of music is authenticity. 'Cause like, how else are you going to keep making it interesting if you're trying to like fit into certain trends or conform to things or play these certain roles? I think really the expansion of the art is just like individuals and communities bringing their uniqueness, you know? Sure, there are still people that like are kind of fake and find ways to fake things, but like with so much being like exposed on social media and stuff like that, it's like you get to this point where the way you sort of survive better is by being authentic and vulnerable and not trying to put up a front. That would have worked, you know, maybe generations ago when you could be more isolated from what's really going on. But now everything is transparent. You know?
I was just going to say that. This goes back to accountability. And, you know, in the rise of social media, it, I think, was more popular, more expected even, more common for sure, to adopt a fake persona or to adopt a persona that was more likable, marketable, whatever. And now that it's not really a novelty anymore, now that social media is a way of life, people are acting more genuine in their social media presence.
Yeah.
And I think that that was a necessary evolution to have happened in order for people to be more accountable, even on the internet, even when people are distant, even when you're far away from whoever you're affecting.
Yeah. You know? It's more about real relationships too, because like, especially like everything on the internet is so saturated that I think the people who really cut through and get to people are the people who you can tell are genuine, you know, and not, you know, having a brand and an image and all that is like fine. As long as you're, say you're a business and you have clients, or you're a, you know, you're making art and you have fans. It's like, how are you interacting with them? Are you really like friends with them? And are you really exploring this together? And I think that's what really draws me to artists. It's like, I probably wouldn't stick around like some social media personality that just like seems very distant. You know?
Yeah. Right.
Cause it won't hook you in the way that human connection does, which is, can be so fueled through, you know, online stuff going on online. It's like once you, that's just sort of the first way in, but like really like the world is turning into like, we're building incredible human connections through online platforms that then extend into outside, you know, human connections that exist offline, you know?
Yeah. But to add to a conversation that Matt and I have had many times about golden age thinking and being born into the wrong generation and that kind of shit, this doesn't feel wrong now. I think for a time, especially for people like me and Matt, it did feel wrong.
Yeah.
It did feel like there was too much, there was too little authenticity in the world and too much relied on technology. And I think, and I'm glad that I'm realizing this tonight, that there is some authenticity kind of creeping back into the social media landscape, and there's some accountability arising from the fact that this is the way that we're expected to connect now. It's not necessarily even like a privilege that we can take and be false versions of ourselves, or be grandiose versions of ourselves. It is slowly becoming a landscape where accountability can also exist.
Yeah. This is actually a double-edged sword. I just thought of like stuff you post on social media. For one thing, like if it were something unethical or like, you know, not kind to other people in your community, then people will literally call you out online. So it's like a multiplication. Yeah. There's that incentive to be good to people. But I think also at the same time that sometimes can be a barrier to vulnerability, because people might feel like, oh, if I post something that is a little bit questionable, but that I'm deeply feeling with in myself, that if I talk about that online, then I'm like not going to be respected for it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this idea that everything's going online now is making sure that people are like behaving well and ethically, but it's also kind of making it hard to be vulnerable about when we are feeling things that may be unethical, you know, and like really talking that through.
Yeah.
I think that I'm just realizing this tonight. I think that's something where we have to really rely on just straight up one-on-one communication now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause there are the people that are going to be really gracious and hear you out and like want to actually have a discussion And there are the people who are just kind of irascible by nature and are going to call you out for any trace of detectable unethicalness.
Yeah.
You know, and like it you do need to have, you're saying one-on-one as in like not talking
with a friend
in person, you
know, personally.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And like, there's a part of vulnerability that's like, sometimes you have to talk about things that are risky to your reputation, you know, because you're working through things in your head that you may know that it doesn't feel right to you or whatever, or that it doesn't feel ethical, but like you just still have to talk it out, you know, and just like figure out, okay, what is the cause of this feeling that is making me not feel like a good person or something like
that. And if it's a post and it doesn't have that conversational tonality to it, then no one will know how vulnerable you're trying to be.
Exactly.
And that can be really, but I don't know, like better things are happening all the time as a result of technology, as a result of social media and social platforms. It's got a long way to go, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think accountability is my main takeaway from this. That is a good thing to try to promote, a good thing to try to foster.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this as somebody who's not really all that active on social media.
Mm-hmm. And that's fine too. I think there also needs to be talk about everybody is on there nowadays, and like we need to stand up for the people who just don't like it and like want to live differently. And it's like, I've heard people say that like, oh, if you're not on social media, you basically like don't exist. And like, and they're talking about that probably in like a, you know, a business or marketing sense.
Yeah.
But it's like, that to me is like insane. Like that's too much. Like we have to talk about like, it is totally chill to just be a person who does your thing outside of social media. And I think, especially because it can be unhealthy at times, it could be hugely distracting. I feel like I make better art when I'm just off of it, you know?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
So here's the thing. I'm off social media. I'm not off it, but like, I don't really participate in it.
Yeah.
Because all I care about is this. All I care about is like long form conversation. And like, I could just like write out a bunch of conversational topics that I would like people to participate in with me throughout the day. Mm-hmm. But I don't, because I look through it, and this, you do that. You do exactly that.
Yeah.
Like all of your posts are pretty like, let's talk about feelings, guys. and it's wonderful. I love it.
Like I've had to think about probably relocating the way I posted on Facebook, because it used to be, that used to be just normal. Like people would post statuses about like what their life is like and stuff.
Yeah.
And now it's like, it really is turning into this like memes, politics, all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I think maybe like podcasting is an incredible form to really get to the heart of like the educational stuff going on, the real discussions. Because it's basically a conversation. It's very close to true human connection. I think it's one of my favorite evolutions of social media now.
Absolutely.
And just the accessibility. You can just pop it. Like, I was listening to podcasts on the way here in my car. You know? It's like you can do that now, and you can, like, it's just incredible. And I think, I don't know what point I was going to get to next, but I think going back to the accountability thing, one thing I want to add about it is that like sometimes I see people talking about accountability in terms of like oh, you got to get in an accountability group or have a accountability partner, and like making it really like tactical. And I think I don't know how much faith I have in that still, you know. I haven't done that kind of stuff that much, and I think like true accountability can be, I think, a great way into it is just like true friendship, because you're actually looking out for each other as an entire person, not just like, oh, are you doing that project? Are you doing that project? Because our paths in life change so much. And I think it's about finding friendships where you have like someone in your life that is supportive of what you're doing, but also understands like is aware of your personality and like what you're going through, but also brings in their own contrary sort of perspective. Like, I really enjoy the idea of like in any like friendship with someone, there's usually like qualities you'll see in that friend that you really want for yourself. It's like a mirror, you know?
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
So they being around people who you really admire shows you what you want to cultivate in yourself. And then it goes the opposite way too. You'll often find that someone you feel like you're really equal friends with, they'll have some weaknesses that you feel you can help them with and like fill in, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just this incredible like avenue to growth. And it's not the only way. I think there's also a lot of growth that can happen just completely in an introverted sense, but you know, personal relationships and just, I'm a really big fan of like close friends and like friends where you just feel like the, you know, the connection is just right and you're really growing together,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like I feel that with Justin and a lot of people in the chess company and, you know, people outside of that too, who are very in a very different sort of headspace or mindset or after different sort of missions. But I look for those connections that feel like it's like a best friend, but in a growth sense, you know?
Hmm. Well, we're going to be playing your song Complete.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Tell me what it's about.
Yeah. So Complete.
What inspired it?
I was at a place in life around when I was like 20, where I had these big dreams about like being a musician and like making a career in it and like having like some relative amount of fame or whatever. And it was this feeling of like, I had this vision, but I felt very inactive and like, I didn't know how to get there. And I didn't like the action of going through that dream wasn't happening for me yet. I felt like lost and sort of like, I'm still in the headspace of figuring out what are the steps to even getting to this, you know, dream of being a musician in the way I wanted to. And like there, I remember explaining to a mentor once that I know my end goal, like my end vision, and I know like sort of roughly where I'm at now and like maybe the next step, but everything in between was like a mystery to me.
Yeah.
So that song is really about putting faith in that like mysterious inner period of like you don't feel complete and you wonder if it'll ever happen. And I just ask that question a lot in this song. And it's like when you try to control your dream or like your vision of what you want for your future, if you try to hang on too much, at some point in life, you just have to let go and allow like a new revised dream of your future to come in that's more mature and more realistic. So that's a lot of what my self-actualization path has been like, been like starting with this very like fantasy dream, like, oh, I want to be famous or whatever. And then like getting more and more realistic of like, how do I just be happy in doing what I like a lot, you know?
Right.
And like, you know, it's not about letting go of like any big dream you still want to hang on to, but it's just like enjoying that journey rather than hanging on to this fantasy goal. Like, just like, I think that song is like, I was in like sort of a fantasy mode, but seeking for a more real way to actually feel complete and spiritually fulfilled, which I feel much more now, you know.
Kind of a way of saying like, to choose the journey, not the destination.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
because like you may not ever be one specific thing that you really wanted to be when you were younger, mm-hmm. but you also never really have to fail. You know, you can just kind of keep, you can just stay on the journey and keep growing.
Yeah. It's like that feeling when you're, for me, like when I was like 14 or 15 and like going through like situational depression and like then coming out of it and having this dream for music, and it was like my glimmer of hope for everything. And it's like, I think when you're at that age, you crystallize this vision of like what you want to do by a certain age. And it's like, I want to be famous by when I'm like 23 or some bullshit like that.
Of course.
But you're not mature enough yet to even know what your actual dream in life is. And it's about like letting that time pass and being like, I thought this would be the coolest dream ever. But now that I'm older, I realize it's like something else that makes me feel much more happy. And I think a reason why I have enjoyed letting this period of solo works kind of expand over a greater number of years is because it can kind of capture different points of that journey, like when I didn't have things figure out and also when I was actually figuring out and like putting it together in the same album is kind of my goal.
That's awesome. All right, well, let's play it.
Yeah.
Complete. as I lie around, I figure out slowly but surely the life I want to lead, but it's not coming out with any sound. When I awake, will I ever feel complete? Looking through a mirrored view, I imagine all the love I want to feel, but I haven't a clue how to make it true. When I'm asleep, will I ever feel complete? Well, I found this dream where I'm swirling around, seeing new colors through ultrasound, wishing I was brought to life brand new, or born again with this different view. And just when I tried to take control, I lost it down the rabbit hole. But in my demise, I regained my soul. I awake to this pounding earthquake. I look around and pray to God I'll find some gold to share in this life of death. Oh, I'm a mess. Will I ever feel complete? You don't have to know yet if I survive. Will I ever feel complete? You don't have to know yet if I'm put to death. Oh, will I die complete while I'm alive? Show me how to live.